Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writing excuses.
Season 20, Episode 26. This is Writing Excuses.
Gaming as a writing metaphor.
I'm Howard.
I'm Aaron.
I'm Dong Wan.
And I'm Dan.
And we get to talk about gaming.
Yay.
Prepare for a 6-hour episode.
Yeah, no. Yeah, I know. I was like, this is actually sort of hard because there's so much that you can talk about when
this
it comes.
This playthrough of Writing Excuses.
Exactly.
Kind of speed run.
Oh my gosh, yes. But I've been thinking about sort of what is it that like separates the way that we game from the way that we write. The way that we experience prose narrative and the way we experience being in a game. And the reason I really love games is I actually think that sometimes giving the person experiencing the narrative more choice and more direct agency over what happens, whether that's true or you just make them feel that it's true, changes the way that we experience story. And for me, that's the big difference between them. But I'm curious for y'all, like, what makes you pick up a game instead of a book for that day? Like, what is the difference between having the same story as a television show versus the game that that show was based on?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I love narrative, but I don't love narrative games a lot of the time. Like, if a game is very story heavy, I'll often be like I tried to play Last of Us a little while ago, and I just was like, I'm putting this down. I'm going to watch the TV show because the way it was giving me the story felt so slow compared to what I wanted in terms of my ability to consume a narrative. And then all the opportunities for player choice were so constrained to things that felt like they didn't matter, AKA how I searched the drawers in this room versus the big narrative stuff I was interested in, which is what do we do about this, you know, outbreak plague situation, right? And so I think for me, when it comes to what am I looking for from a game experience, I want something that's more emergent and more complex than you can get from somebody telling me a story, right? So this is why I love FromSoft games so much, where I build the narrative by interacting with the world rather than them telling me what the story is.
I think it was, must have been 15 years ago now, I was at a convention and had the opportunity to go out to lunch with Steve Jackson, and he dropped a bit of wisdom that I have never been able to shake. He said, All games are physics simulations. And I thought, no, that's not true. Crap. Every game, chess, is a physics simulation. At some level, all games are simulations. And so when I sit down, when I think of gaming or playing a game as a metaphor for writing, I often think, you know, why would I want to play a game like, Burger Time instead of working fast food? Why would I want to play a simulation of fast food restaurant instead of working fast food? Well, because I don't want to smell like hamburgers at the end of the day. But these simulations that we play can teach us things. And in many cases, they can teach us the same things that the job would teach us, only without the risk of smelling like fry vat.
And I think they create a gameplay loop. So if you're writing a game, The main thing you have to figure out, what are the actions of the game? What are the things that the game lets you do?
What are the verbs?
You know, what are the verbs of the game? And so like in a, and it limits them. They're always less than the verbs that you can experience in life, because a game is not going to be able to like do like, and then I scratched my nose for 3 seconds for no reason. I mean, who knows, maybe in the future, but it's hard to get to that level of granularity. And so they then have to make those verbs things that you are going to want to choose. And it's funny, I'm thinking back to like weeks and weeks and weeks ago when we talked about second person and how second person requires buy-in. And games are often a second person medium. And similarly, you have to get the player to buy into, this is the situation I want to be in. These are the verbs that I want to be able to use to navigate that situation. Mm-hmm. Like, you may not like the, I love a narrative game, but where the feels like I don't have enough verbs to like move this narrative forward. Whereas I'm like, oh, actually for me, the listen, the experience, the watch it unravel is a verb that is one that works well for me, which is why different people have different desires and loves of games. Like some people like a puzzle game like I do. Some people like narrative. Some people like I want to shoot a thing from a weird angle.
I mean, and this is why tabletop can be so interesting too, because, you know, even in this case, buy-in is so important and difficult to get. So when you're trying to get someone to play a new gaming system they've never played before, just the lift of getting them to understand what the core metaphors and verbs of the game are can be, you know, 3 hours of sitting there and walking someone through the session or whatever it is. And so how you get that buy-in, you know, in terms of like, what are the world-building hooks? What are the character hooks? What's the settings hooks? To get them on board with the idea of these are interesting verbs I want to interact with. I think that can be such the challenge with really effective game writing.
Yeah, Aaron, I'm glad that you enjoy narrative games.
I'm buying them all.
One on this one. And I find that I don't like the way games tell stories often, which is strange to me. And I'm trying to figure out why, and I don't know if I can articulate it. But relating this back to writing, there's an interesting middle ground of control, and we've talked about this a little bit. Whereas, you know, if I'm going to just go and work in a burger restaurant, then I have control over what I'm doing. Maybe not as much because I'm an employee, right? Whereas if I'm going to read a book about that, I have no control whatsoever. And games exist in that very intriguing middle ground where there's a lot of interaction, there's a lot of input from both sides. And that's writing for that is very different.
Yeah. I was just thinking about like the competence thing as well. Like people love a competent character. Like if you want people to love your characters, one way to do it is to show them being really good at something, because for some reason we like it. We like feeling competent. And in a game like a burger, there's a game that I play on VR called Star Tenders, where you are tending bar for aliens. And the entire game is just like increasingly complex drink orders that you have to try to make before your customers get mad and wander off in an alien type way. And so what I like about it is like you're not expected to master it the first time.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you get to learn a skill and then they add a little bit more. They add a slightly more complex thing. And all of a sudden, like the verb that was hard for you in the beginning is one of a much larger sentence that you're able to manage. And that gives us a feeling of competence that really makes us feel like we are able to advance that I think is hard to do in prose. Like you can show a character going through that journey and have you really relate to that character. And therefore you go through that. But in games, because you're the one who has to make the physical motion, it often feels like in that physics simulation, like you got a chance to level up.
I had a friend tell me years ago, it was the very first of the Batman Arkham games. And he said, oh, my gosh, this game was so good. And he described this one scene that, you know, that plays out. And he says, and I was Batman. I got to be every bit as I got to do all of the Batman. I did all the moves. I used all the tools. I used all the whatever. And I played that game and realized I do not get to be Batman. I was not good enough. I did not learn fast enough. And I got tired and I moved away from it. And that's fine. You know, you play a game for a little while, you decide it's not for you, you play something else. But the idea that the simulation of whatever can map onto players differently, where a player gets to have an experience that they've been dreaming about their whole life and maybe didn't know it. Mm-hmm. My friend Joey, a Batman book would not have made him feel the same way that game made him feel.
Well, and I think that kind of ties into what makes Hades such a big success is the way they tied narrative to failure, right? When you fail, you get a little more piece of story. You get a little more piece of interaction, and then you repeat the loop, right? Like, they were able to build the storytelling into the roguelike nature of the game. As you go back through it, you learn more about the world, you learn more about the characters, deepening your investment in the character and in their relationships when you do fail. So where something, you know, like the Rocksteady game kind of falls down is, if you fail at being Batman, now you just don't get to progress. You don't get more Batman because yeah. you were a bad Batman. If you fail at being Zagreus, then he's a failure. That's the whole point of the story. That is you engaging with it and getting more of it as you build those skills and learn, right? So, like, you know, whether it's your aliens walking away from you in an alienating way because they're upset, or it's, you know, being spotted by the criminals because you're a bad Batman, like, the way in which we participate in the stories has to be fluid in that way, or has to be a rewarding experience in that way, or our buy-in starts to break down.
I was laughing when you said that because I remember the time I tried to play Grand Theft Auto and there's an tutorial quest where you just get on a skateboard and I don't drive and am not good at driving related tasks. I could not finish. Like, it's a thing that they mean for it to take 3 seconds. Yeah. Like, an hour and a half later, I was like, obviously, this game was not meant for me because I can't even get a car.
I should not be stealing automobiles.
Exactly. I think that's why it comes back to books in that way, though, because not all books are for everybody, right? Like, what makes sense to you and what you have buy-in for and what is an engaging world-building character narrative to you will be really different than the next reader, right? And, you know, this in the same way that a game about stealing cars is probably not for someone who's never driven a car before, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that can be true in fiction as well, and understanding who your reader is also really important there.
All right, I'm going to interrogate you about narrative games and yellow boxes, but first, we're going to press pause.
Between drafting your new novel, building your lore bible, or meeting with your critique group, who has time to stress about website security? As a writer, your website is your digital face to the world that lets people know about your work and where they can find it. Securing your website means less stress about anyone disrupting that important outlet. Kinsta offers managed hosting for WordPress with lightning-fast load times, enterprise-grade security, and 24/7 human-only customer support. They're available in multiple languages and ready to assist regardless of site complexity. It's complete peace of mind knowing your WordPress site is always secure, online, and performing at its best. Kinsta provides enterprise-grade security and is one of the few hosting providers for WordPress with SOC 2 and other certifications that guarantee the highest level security for your website. And Kinsta customers can experience up to 200% faster sites by simply moving their WordPress sites to the platform. They even have user-friendly custom dashboard called My Kinsta that makes managing your site or multiple sites a breeze. And if you're moving from another host, they offer unlimited expert-led migrations to ensure a smooth transition so you won't experience any downtime. Ready to experience Kinsta's hosting for yourself? Get your first month free when you sign up at Kinsta.com today. It's the perfect opportunity to see why Kinsta is trusted by thousands of businesses worldwide to power their websites. Visit KINSTA.com to get this limited time offer for new customers on select plans. Don't miss out. Get started for free today.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
And now we're back. And so, unpause.
How was that load screen for you?
Hope you enjoyed it. So something that I'm really interested in is, I'm like, people who don't like narrative games, I must find out why. As somebody who enjoys writing the narratives of games. And I think it's interesting, like the wanting to tell a story versus how much gamers experience it is fascinating. If you write for games, you know that you're writing the item description that like 89% of people will just be like, nope, X out. It's like you're writing the dialogue that people are trying to skip in order to get to their next action. But I'm wondering, like, when you say I don't like narrative games, I'm wondering what makes something a narrative game. Mm-hmm. Is it just how obvious it is in its narrative? Is it an outside category? Like, what does that mean for you?
Well, I don't think it comes down to the obvious nature of it, because I, for example, really didn't like Hades because it is not presenting me with a story. I mean, that's not the only reason, but it's a story you have to discover. And that's a place where Dongwon and I diverge, because I don't like that in games. I enjoy being told, this is the story that you have to fulfill. Go do it. Here's what this is about. Go do it. And this idea that I have to just randomly discover what the story is by talking to people or by reading books that I find laying around the environment always just rubs me the wrong way.
Sorry, I'm giggling over here. Railroad Tycoon, the linear narrative. I totally feel you here. One of the things that I love about games where a lot of the story is in front of you, but there's a lot of open space, is that, and no, fair listener, I am not going to become a streamer of games, but I will often talk back to the characters on screen and say stuff that is just funny to me and is sort of in universe or not in universe. And I get joy out of that. Mm-hmm. Even though the story is maybe a little flat, I enjoy fluffing it up a little on my own.
And thinking about this as a metaphor for writing, it's interesting because it's like, how strong, how like is the power of the narrative? Like how much is the narrative saying like, a story is happening here.
Yeah.
How much is it making you discover it? Because there are prose pieces where the story is not like a very clear, like plot point to plot point type of thing,
yeah.
But it feels a little more like you're kind of wandering through and story is occurring. And it's interesting thinking about like how much are we guiding? How much are we controlling our readers? I mean, we're always controlling everything, but how much is that control felt by them versus it just feels like, you know, they're having to put it together for themselves.
Well, I'm getting on my soapbox for a second here of my obsession with FromSoft games, right? And so these are the Dark Souls games, Bloodborne, Elden Ring. And the reason I love these games so much is they're deeply authored experiences. Like there's no question that there isn't a very specific point of view behind those worlds and that they are creating an experience for the player that has thematics and characters and all the things you expect from story. But you're not getting that story in big cutscenes where people are talking to each other and this story is being told to you. You're having to discover that story by doing things like reading the item descriptions, by piecing together like, oh, I fought this boss. This boss was like said this one thing that's related to this other boss. Like you're trying to like red string theory together the world building and the plot. And I recognize it's not for everybody and completely understand why. But what I love about it is I think it gets something to something or gets at something that's really true about all storytelling that we do, which is you have to make room for the audience, right? And this is the thing I talk about a lot as I'm putting together an actual play show and things like that. One thing I talk about with my players and with the rest of my cast is we need to make room at the table for the audience. There's a fifth seat at the table here, and it's the audience who is here participating this with us. And it's why I love actual play shows like Dimension 20 or Worlds Beyond Number or Friends at the Table, because they understand that I am also a participant in the story in an active way, right? And I think that's true of a book too. When you write a book, you're writing a book for someone. You have to understand that the reader is there picking it up and interacting with it. Now, their verb is limited to turn the page and continue reading. They have one verb, which is keep reading, don't keep reading, right? How they feel about that, how they engage with it on a moment-to-moment basis can change and evolve. But the more you make space for them to make their own interpretation, to engage in a certain way, and to draw their own conclusions from stuff, I think that's where interacting with fiction can be so exciting and so deep and rich.
It's funny thinking about like the verbs of games. I'm reminded of, so I used to do writing for Zombies Run, which is a game with only one verb, yeah. Run. And so, you know, and they've years and years and years and years of narrative of like small scene of people talking, and then something has to happen at the end of the scene to force you to run, you know, and to go to the next thing, which is like, was really interesting in figuring out what are the ways to continue to get, you know, audience buy-in. Because if you think of tabletop games, some have extraordinarily complex mechanics that will take you 10 years to figure out. Or like that board game where you're like, our first 8-hour session is going to be figuring out how this board game works. And then eventually we'll become experts. But, you know, thinking about, do you need that level? Like how much complexity is too much? Like, and that can be true in a game, but also in a narrative, how much just becomes distracting where it becomes about the experience of the narrative as opposed to the narrative itself.
When we look at audience buy-in, it's useful to look at improvisational theater where the audience is literally shouting suggestions at the stage. And if the audience is not engaged, the show falls flat pretty quickly. By the same token, comedy acts on stage in comedy clubs, the audience is buying in by laughing. They make noise. If the audience does not make noise, we say that the comedian is dying because that's what that experience is like. And if the audience is making noise, if they're laughing all the way through, the comedian is killing. Why is it so violent? Probably because public speaking is the thing we're all scared of the most. And so we tie it to death in this way. But the sense of audience buy-in is very, very visible in improvisational theater and in comedy clubs. And if you think about how important the audience participation is to the performers, and then look at what an audience means to you as a writer, that contrast might change the way you think about what you're writing.
I've been sitting here trying to think about what narratives in games I enjoy. And it comes back to a lesson that I have learned for my own writing, which is how much do I love the characters? How much do I care about what happens to these characters? Because there are plenty of games, and I apologize for continuing to rip on Hades because it's a beloved game that everyone other than me adores.
Just alienating our whole audience.
I know. I could not possibly have cared less about any of the characters in that. And so,
gasp.
I know. And so playing the game didn't really hold a lot of appeal for me after, you know, the basic gameplay loop I figured out. You know, the narrative side of it didn't work for me. Whereas something like Cyberpunk 2077, and this, so much of this comes down to personal preference, those characters I fell in love with. And I wanted to spend time with them. And so when I am doing my own writing, that's what I keep coming back to as the lesson I learned, which is I'm asking my readers to spend, you know, however many hours it takes to read this book, to invite this character into their brain and spend time with them. It has to be somebody that they love and care about.
Well, so interesting because I played Hades because I loved the characters, and I've played a billion hours of Cyberpunk 2077. I really love that game. But I play that game not for the characters, but for the world. I find the characters, they're fine. I enjoy engaging with them a lot of time. But mostly what I want to do is run around that city stealing and driving cars and, you know, getting into fights with weird criminals. Like, that's the thing that I really, like, mechanically and vibes-wise, being in that world. To me, Cyberpunk is a game that's all about vibes. Like, the aesthetics of it, the culture of it, all of that are things that I really, really enjoy. And so I think it's like also this little lesson. When I say make room for your audience in terms of crafting your narrative experience, whether that's a game or a novel or a short story or a film, it's, you also can't predict what part of your story that people are going to attach to, right? I know people who play Hades and have never read a single piece of the text. They just like the combat. They enjoy the mechanical aspect of the combat. And I know people who have never played an action game in their life that somehow saw credits on Hades, a thing that I, who play a lot of action games, have never been able to do, because they just loved the character so much that they just kept playing this thing and learned a whole set of skills that they never had before in their entire life. And so watching what your audience will connect to is something you can't necessarily predict, right? Mm-hmm. And you can't control for that. You can have guesses, you can have focuses, but that's why you kind of got to chase your own interest as much as anything else.
Dan, I remember a comment you made on the Borderlands games years ago, which was, yeah, this is two games, and one of them's really fun, the one where you run around, you know, shooting things and exploring the world. And then there's the game of comparing red arrows and green arrows on your gear, and I don't like that game at all.
Yeah.
And
100%.
And I love that. I love that principle that there can be a thing that we just love that is inextricably fused to a thing we despise. And are we going to play anyway? Are we going to continue to consume? Mm-hmm. Or are we going to look for something that doesn't have the up-down arrow game in it?
This is me and Destiny's death grip on my brain, but yeah.
I think one of the reasons I really love games and game writing is because there are all these different levers you can be pushing in any narrative. You can be pushing the character lever. You can be pushing the world lever. You can be, you know, pushing the what are the actions lever, which is often a plot lever. But it's like in games, they're all sort of, they are more discrete. They feel more discrete from each other. Like in a prose narrative, you can really weave in like the world is happening with the characters, with the actions all at once. But the way that games are designed, like someone makes the world and then they sort of put characters in it who have their own set of actions, and they can't 100% control how you use those actions and that character to experience the world. And because of that, there are intersections that will happen that they will never be able to anticipate. It's called like emergent gameplay, where somebody is having a gameplay experience you did not intend, but they were able to find those connections in interesting different ways. And I think it's nice when we think about our stories to think about how are all the levers that we're pulling different, and like how if we separate out the way that we're talking about lenses is sort of a version of doing that. Of thinking about what are all the different lenses, what are all the different levers, and how are we combining them in really interesting ways to make stories.
And also just learning to realize that you don't have full control over the audience experience, right? Mm. And that they're going to bring their own lenses. They're going to bring their own verbs. They're going to bring their own way to interact with your story to that experience. And once it's out of your hands, you don't get to tell people you're reading this wrong, right? Or you can try, sure, but like you're going
to
get
voted
off.
Feel free to say that. It's probably not going to work out the way you want,
right? Like, and so, you know, I think one of the things I found really exciting about this topic of gaming, not just because I clearly love games, as do we all, but because it is this thing that I think is really, really hard for people who create for pros to wrap their heads around, is learning to not just like ease off of the control, but actively invite in the reader into making this experience with us. And I think learning how to do that is a thing that can really take your fiction from being exciting to, you know, truly connecting with a huge fan base.
And with that, we're at the end of this game session, and we are going to move to the homework. And for the homework, I'm going to challenge you a little. There are probably folks listening to this who are like, last game I played was Tag. But I would like you to think about, take a project that you're working on and imagine that someone is making a game of it, and figure out what would that game be? What would be the actions that the characters would be doing? What would be the part of the world that the game would be focused on? And just write out sort of like a, here's the game of my amazing work of art. If you need help with this, you can look at things that are games that were made from things like Lord of the Rings game. Just read a description of it. See if anything comes to you. And then as you're writing that out, is there anything you discovered about your story that was unexpected?
This has been Writing Excuses. You're out of excuses. Now go write.
Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. For this episode, your hosts were Dongwon Song, Aaron Roberts, Dan Wells, and Howard Taylor. This episode was engineered by Marshall Carr Jr., mastered by Alex Jackson and produced by Emma Reynolds. For more information, visit writingexcuses.com.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
You have 5 new messages. Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week? Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.